Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Alrighty. Welcome back to the Much of This Podcast. I'm your host, Tanner. And I hope you had a good week. Trying to quarter this again. And it's far too loud. And, busy working. Did about 12 hours of overtime last week, and I had a work. Some more overtime this week, Saturday. Because end of the month, and we're always busy for some reason. I don't know why. It's like getting a couple minutes at the end of the month before the beginning of the month, I guess. I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, this is take two of recording this episode because I messed up and was talking and nothing was being recorded. Okay, I speak a little louder. Okay, anything happening with me? No, not really. Actually, no, that's not true. I've been gotten to this Facebook group for Anchor podcasters, and it's been pretty awesome and pretty helpful answering questions. I've talked to some very cool people. Say hi to them. I've found some pretty cool podcasts I've been listening to at work lately. Like, there's one by this married couple. They like talk about this Hulu show about the what we talk about, what we do in the shadows. I don't know what the show's called. What we do in the shadows. Yeah, it's called What We Talk About in the Shadows. It's really good. They have like one episode out, and it's really good. And it's and their dynamics of like being a couple like really help. It's really good. I want to hear more from this podcast. They're on Anchor. It's great. Hope they make more episodes. And there's the Screaming Choice show. This show's, I've been like binge watching this crap for like all week. It's like a really funny and really interesting show. And like his like episode on metal, his history of metal, was really good. I recommend that. And this story about the shadow people is really good too. And what he does is like every episode or most of the episodes, he like plays some like metal music. And it's awesome. It's a shit. Whoa. It's really hilarious and really entertaining. I think he could possibly do some really cool live shows if he can get a gig. That's he's on YouTube too. If you want to look him up on YouTube. Oh, I'd like to have him on here. I can put them all in here, really. And there's, it's the Screaming Choice show on Anchor. Other, podcasts I've really enjoyed has been the Believe Me, Spirit Stories, and Paranormal Tales by Molly Caston. She's really good. She's like, I can see her podcast like blowing up. I can see her doing like, she's writing a book right now, and I can see it like selling, like being New York's top seller list. It's super duper interesting, her podcast, and the way she's like, she's so intriguing and entertaining and thrilling. How she tells the stories and stuff. Anyway, it's Believe Me, Spirit Stories and Paranormal Tales by Molly Gans on Anchor. Go on the app or in your browser, whatever. And I'm sure you could, if you don't use Anchor, you can find links to different platforms from there. Yeah. All right, let's go over this again. Second time I'm going through this. Louisiana sits above. Yeah, we're in Louisiana, by the way. The Bayou State, Cajun. Got some New Orleans jazz, Mardi Gras. Uncle Ben's Rice. Is that from New Orleans? I don't know. But jazz. Love jazz. It's great. Louisiana sits above the Gulf of Mexico at the mouth of the Mississippi River, bordered by Arkansas to the north, Mississippi to the east, and Texas to the west. Originally colonized by the French during the 18th century, it became U.S. territory as part of the historic Louisiana Purchase in 1803 and was admitted to the Union in 1812. Louisiana's capital city is Baton Rouge. It is also home to the historic port city, New Orleans, which is famous for its unique cuisine, jazz, and spectacular Mardi Gras festival. Louisiana became a state on April 30th, 1812. Did you know some natives of Louisiana consider themselves Cajun or Creole? Cajun refers to a cross-cultural mix of several ethnic groups, including French, Creole, Spanish, German, and Anglo-American. The word Creole comes from the Spanish word Creole, spelled C-R-I-O-L-L-O, which means one from the colony. The capital of Louisiana is Baton Rouge. The population is 4,533,372. The size of Louisiana is 51,988 square miles. The names for Louisiana is the Pelican State Sportsman Paradise. The state motto is Union, Justice, Confidence. The state tree is the ball of cypress. The state flower is the magnolia. State bird is the eastern brown pelican. In 1803, Thomas Jefferson doubled the size of the United States by purchasing the Louisiana Territory. 820,000 square miles of land between the Mississippi River and the Rocky Mountains. From France, Louisiana was the first of 13 states or parts of states to be carved out of the territory in 1812. Due to slow communications, the Battle of New Orleans was fought 2 weeks after the Treaty of Ghent was signed on December 24, 1814, ending the War of 1812 between the United States and Great Britain. General Andrew Jackson, who led between 6,000 and 7,000 troops to victory, emerged from the battle a national hero. At 34 stories high and 450 feet tall, the Louisiana State Capitol is the tallest of all state capitol buildings. On September 8, 1935, Senator Huey Long, who had been instrumental in convincing the public to construct the new building in 1935, was assassinated in one of its corridors. Louisiana is home to a wide diversity of cultures. Two prominent ethnic groups are Cajuns, descendants of a French-speaking group of Acadians from Canada, and Creoles, people from a mixed French, Spanish, Caribbean, African, or Indian background. Hurricane Katrina hit landfall in southeastern Louisiana on August 29, 2005, as a Category 3 storm, the most destructive national disaster in U.S. history. It resulted in more than 1,800 deaths, over 1,500 of which were in Louisiana, and close to $100 billion in damages. Wow. Speaking of hurricanes, let me change this up a bit, like I did before. There's a big old there's a hurricane back in 1856. Let's read about it. Close encounter with a creature of the Finney tribe, Louisiana Sea Monster Sightings of 1836 by Carl A. Brasseau and H. Dickinson Jose. Americans' fascination with tales of the bizarre and unknown is by no means a new phenomenon. Throughout the antebellum period, sea serpent tales generated the same degree of interest in American newspaper readers that UFO, Sasquatch, and Yeti stories presently command, and popular interest in sea serpent has endured largely because of periodic sightings and international fascination with the search for the Loch Ness Monster. In recent years, several documentaries, books, and popular articles have chronicled a search for Nessie and other less newsworthy but equally mysterious sea creatures reported throughout the world. The June 1991 issue of the National Fisherman, for example, features one such article on late 20th century American sea monster sightings. Widespread American interest in sea serpent science is generally believed to have begun in 1817, when approximately 300 reptile residents of coastal Massachusetts villages claimed to have seen a dark brown, smooth-skinned creature which moved by means of vertical undulations of its 60-foot-long serpentine body. Many additional sightings of the Glacier Sea Serpent, as it quickly became to be known, were made near Glacier during the next 2 years, and additional reports were made in New England and in Maritime Canada as late as 1840. While the Glacier Sea Serpent became a virtual cause caliber of American science and provided material for transatlantic debate, reports of strange sea creatures began to surface in other maritime regions. The first were in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea, and later in the South Atlantic from the early 1830s through the 1850s. A remarkable variety of animals were described in antebellum sea serpent tales. Most of these creatures are readily identifiable as giant squid, basking sharks, oarfish, manatee, manta rays, mumbulas, whale sharks, and other well-known maritime fauna. But as with contemporary UFO stories, a sufficient number of unexplainable reports surfaced to keep alive popular interest in and popular controversy over sea serpent stories. Popular skepticism was initially aroused by the first major American inquiry into science of the serpent mysterious sea creatures, ignoring all but one of the numerous eyewitness accounts of the 1817 Massachusetts sea serpent sightings collected by its hand-picked representatives. The Linnean Society of New England identified the creature as an enormous black snake, basing its conclusions on a tall tale spun by a person known to be dubious reliability. Not surprisingly, the Linnean Society's findings were soon dismissed as complete unfounded by leading European zoologists. Therefore, the Society and its attempt to identify the creature in fashion became the first subject of ridicule on both sides of the Atlantic. The gullibility of the Linnean Society, the inability of curiosity seekers to capture or kill a young specimen of the sea serpent, the monster's ability to repel buoyants, and almost incessant public feuding of naturalists and ecologists over the probable identity of the frequently sighted beast quickly disillusioned the man on the street. According to one scholar, on the public preferred to disbelieve the whole thing. Popular apathy, however, is in no way impeded either the ongoing scientific debate over the possible existence and identity of the sea serpent, or the journalistic coverage of the debate and the recurring science all continue unabated. And testifying the smoldering controversy surrounding the sea serpent science were numerous hoaxes perpetrated by individuals inside and outside of the American scientific community. In New York in 1845, Dr. Albert Carl Koch displayed for public viewing what he claimed to be a carefully reconstructed, fully intact skeleton of a sea serpent. The 114-long serpentine skeleton possessed front flippers, a long erect neck, a large head, long jaws, and fierce-looking teeth, and the characteristic vertical undulations of the spine. The skeleton shown to thousands of New York and London curiosity seekers a cost of 25 cents per head was demonstrated upon examination by reptile zoologists to be a cunning hoax. It consisted of bones from various species, including the fossilized remains of a prehistoric whale. The hoax elicited a storm of criticism from the scientific community, and the sea serpent consequently fell into a state of scholarly and popular disrepute. Then in 1848, several officers and sailors aboard the HMS Dauntless reported the determinant of their military careers a sea serpent sighting in the South Atlantic. The report of the Dauntless officers temporarily stemmed the rising tide of scholarly and popular skepticism and reignited the long-standing controversy. Commendantly, public interest fueled by the controversy and under sightings rose above the course of the following decade. It was at this juncture, Louisiana experienced its first court first sighting, reported in the article, and the news article set out below.
A huge fish. Miss Marshall, Oregon, gives us the following descriptions of a monster of the Finnish tribe, lately killed by him off the mouth of the falls in the breakers. The length of the body from point of nose to tail, 14 feet. Length of tail, 6 foot. String width on the back, 12 foot. Thickness from top of back to bottom belly, 7 foot, width of mouth, 3 foot, 6 inches, with horns on either side, 3 feet long, cavity of brain, 9 by 16 inches. This huge monster, when kills lions, mouth open, catching small fish, which is supposed to be success. It was shot through the head the distance about 5 paces and immediately sunk to the bottom. It was then fastened to and towed into shore, where it was dissected for the purpose of being converted to oil. By a storm arising, the captain was forced to abandon the project and fly for safety. Its liver was the size of a rice cask. The exterior of the fish was covered with a skin resembling more than an elephant than anything else to which we can compare it to. Mr. Ogigan is a seafaring man and says he has never before seen a fish of this description in our waters. What kind of fish is it, and where did it come from? Let us hear from you, naturalist, from the Theobald Minerva.
We have not a doubt, but this is fearful devilfish, so common on the shores of our southern Atlantic states. Not for its devilish pranks with boats, anchors, etc. There is a book somewhere entitled, we believe, Devil Fishing on the Coast of Carolinas. If you find it, Miss Minerva, you may be thoroughly enlightened and serious.
We all know real life can suck sometimes, and your boss accidentally seeing you in your underpants on Zoom last week doesn't help any.
That's why reluctantly codependent sisters, the Shira and Rishalia, keep you enthralled and in stitches every week with their podcast, Legendary Africa.
Every Monday and Friday, we take you on a journey of mythical lands, magical objects, and monstrous creatures, both ancient and modern.
Find Legendary Africa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you feed your ears. And remember, stay safe,
stay sexy,
and stay legendary.
There is circumstantial evidence that sightings described above resulted at least in part from two major hurricanes in the eastern Gulf of Mexico during the late summer and fall of 1856. The first and most famous of these storms was the so-called Last Island Storm of April 9th through 10th of 1856. It apparently formed in the extreme southeastern coast, eastern Gulf of Mexico during sometime between July 31st and August 8th, and subsequently moved steadily towards the northwest. A storm veered due west and gained speed as it approached the Alabama coastline on Saturday, August 9th. Striking a glancing blow at Mobile, the hurricane moved directly toward the mouth of the Mississippi River, then turned westward following the Louisiana coastline as far as Franklin, before turning north toward Vermilionville. After ravaging south central Louisiana, it turned to the northeast, causing considerable damage at Bayou Sara, then veered northward and struck Natchez, Mississippi, and New Carthage, Louisiana. A storm characterized by eyewitnesses along the Louisiana coast as the most powerful hurricane in living memory caused extensive property damage throughout the lower Mississippi Valley. Nowhere was the storm's fury felt more forcefully than the Last Island Resort off the coast of Terrebonne Parish. There, during the afternoon of August 9th, northern gales induced the result with water from Lake Pelto, a coastal estuary north of the barrier island. Then, following a reversal of wind directions marking the storm's westerly passage, the island was submerged beneath a massive tidal surge. That surge carried many of the approximately 140 human victims at least 60 miles inland. The storm's south wind waves continued to pound the island well into the following day. The destructive effect of the wind and surf were not confined to the last area. Indeed, the storm fury was felt less intensely at the nearby mouth of Bayou La Forge, where Marathon Oregon's mysterious creature would later be found. Coastal Louisiana hardly began to recover from the Last Island storm when a second major hurricane of nearly equal destructive power approached the Gulf Coast. This storm, known as the Southeastern State Hurricane of 1856, formed east of Cuba, sometimes for a 20 cents. The storm entered the Gulf of Mexico via Florida Straits on the 27th and 28th, inflicting several wind damage on Key West and South Cuba. It appears to have meandered throughout the eastern coast on the 28th, 29th, before making landfall at Panama City, Florida on the 13th. On the 29th, the storm was eventually close to Pelican State and damaged numerous seagoing vessels along the southeastern Louisiana coast. The heavy seas it generated, like the tidal action sustained by its more famous predator, eventually had an impact upon the Louisiana coastline. Hurricanes such as the powerful 1856 storms have a marked effect on the waters lying in the course. While there's no proof that the animal was hurricane transported, the fact that the local fishermen that local policemen were unfamiliar with it, just that it was, though normally occurring offshore waters. Manta rays have been reported near the mouth of the Mississippi River. They're often seen close to shore in southern Texas and Florida, where clear, warm, oceanic type waters are present near coastline. There are a few camps exist, demonstrating such phenomenon in Louisiana. Horizontal vegetative movements are aircraft features of hurricanes. A group of rare combine porpoises, normally inhabiting oceanic waters, were sighted near Point Up for after Hurricane Juan in 1985. Several movements of fishes, including introductions of unusual varieties, were noted for after storms in Florida and Texas. The storms tracked to the south and west of the Delta would have put the area in its northeast quadrant, where winds would have been easterly, easily explained movements from off the river to LaForge, a distance of about 40 miles. While water temperatures of the seas would be depressed, there was stability around 70 degrees. There was undoubtedly a similar movement of water and fauna during the last island hurricane. Any of these storms-induced change could have contributed directly to the presence of the sea creature, to the Minerva Ark. So basically, a storm, a hurricane, turn up some water. It's good for the animals that live out way out in the ocean to go. What they're saying. Okay. It's hardly surprising that the counter of the sea monster was reported by both the Turbo Minerva and Hermosaurus newspapers that had recently exhibited the most interest in maritime affairs among Louisiana's rural antebellum weeklies. Though the editors, political, and economic rivals competing for the region's tiny potential readership differed personally in many respects, and shared a common interest in natural history and natural science, as seen perhaps most clearly in the caustic postscript added by Sears' editor. Sears' power of deduction was indeed formidable, for only two creatures in the animal kingdom conceivably fit the detailed descriptions furnished by the Turbo River, of one of them being the devilfish, or giant devil ray, as is more correctly known. While sharing the distinctive detailed toe-head shape and tail of other Atlantic rays, the giant devil rays, which attains a maximum breadth of over 21 feet between pectoral fin tips, have one distinctive feature: twin cephalic fins resembling horns, located on the opposite ends of the creature's mouth, directly in front of the ray's side-mounted eyes. Small cephalic fins aid the fish in steering, also push food into the ray's mouth, automatically attracting towards the orifices whenever coming into contact with any object. Once attracted, the fins remain taut until the object is consumed. It is in this manner, as suggested by the editor of the series, that the giant devil rays occasionally became entangled in anchor chains. Giant devil rays may exhibit shoal waters, shoal waters within a few miles of the mainland, but in the shore Gulf of Mexico, they generally occur offshore in clear, more tropical waters, away from the muddy discharge of the Mississippi River. While these creatures may be found at various depths, they frequently surface to bask and to feed by swimming open mouth throughout whatever schools of small fish or planktonic crustacean they meet. Planktonic, whatever. need to spell check on this article, man. While visible along the surface, these rays are usually unaggressive towards humans and have reportedly been so unwary that it is easy to approach one closely in a small boat. They are sometimes hunted in tropical regions for their livers, which, as in case of the creature in the Minerva article, are boiled into oil in their skin, which is used as a primitive abrasive. While many of the giant devil rays' features resemble those of the giant creature killed by Myrtle Oregon, some important characteristics, such as the elephantine skin, do not. The skin of a giant devil ray is covered with small tubercles and is texture more reminiscent of sandpaper than of elephant skin. However, it is unlikely that anyone who saw the creature has ever seen an elephant, thus would hardly have known what an elephant's hide was like. Also, while it is possible that the 1856 storm caused a temporary incursion of the so-called blue clear water from the deep regions of the Gulf, large rays were rarely seen so close to the coast. But by November, the 1856 storm's surge had long since passed, and other lingering effects of the August storm had drastically abated. It is thus by no means certain that the necessary blue water conditions existed near the mouth of Bayou LaForge 3 months later. The identity of the creature killed by Oregon constantly remains uncertain. It probably was a giant devil ray, but elephant skin and thick body suggest the possibility of a West Indian manatee, more commonly known as a sea cow. In the 19th and 20th centuries, individual manatees have migrated periodically from the natural habitat in South Florida to coastal Louisiana. Like the beast killed in the breakers near the mouth of Bayou LaForge, they are covered with a thick, wrinkled skin resembling that of an elephant's. Table 1 shows the quantitative features mentioned in the article compared to that of the study specimens of manta rays and manatees. While the body of the LaForge monster is too long for its breath and too thick in comparison with the manta ray, the other members are consistent with for known lengths. Since the storm intruded, preventing retrieval of the specimen, the measurements would have been estimates made during trying conditions. Thickness, often variable, might have been the most difficult parameter to determine. Length appears half again too long for a ray, but would have been even more extreme for a manatee. Elephant skin is a better description from a manatee. While a poor choice still might describe the manta, manta do not feed on fishes, as noted for the monster, while manatees are well-established vegetarians. In an unlikely event that the animal killed by Myrtle Oregon was indeed a manatee, this would constitute the first documented sightings of a sea cow in Louisiana. G.H. Lowry Jr., author of the most comprehensive listing of Louisiana manatee sightings previously available, indicates the first known encounter occurred in January 1929 when a sea cow was captured in Kalamazoo Lake. Another manatee was spotted in Zebin Lake in 1941. Several other manatees were sighted in southern Louisiana during the 1970s in the Mississippi River at Norco, April 8, 1975, and swamps near Morgan City, July 10, 1976, and in the Gulf of Mexico, 12 miles west of Brenton Island, July 4, 1979. Most, if not all, of these migrating herbivores died in Louisiana's coastal waters. Victims of the Pelican State's winters, which are sufficiently cold to kill the aquatic flora that sustained them. Too weak to turn to Florida, these gentle creatures slowly die of anorexia and probable cold stress. Such seems to have been the fate of the 1856 sea monster. The dying creature could also have been injured by the 1856 hurricane. Massive tidal surge and festering wounds exposed to portions of the skull could possibly account for the horns mentioned in Oregon's descriptions of the animal. Such an injury could conceivably have prevented a manatee from returning to the protected waters of the bayou. Such physical aberrations as horns, however, are more characteristic of the features of the devil or giant rays, as are the dimensions of the back and spine. But not all of those giant rays' physical features match those provided in Oregon's account. Some characteristics, such as the depth and skin texture of the creature, were closely matched those of the manatee. Positive identification of the creature is therefore impossible. Unfortunately for historians and naturalists, a true identity of Louisiana's first sea monster may never be known. Well.
Okay. Stretch.
Okay. My words. Excellent. Grunge. Yes, it's grunge. Big fish, whatever it is. There's a bullet. That's a badass manatee. Not manatee, but manamara. You know. Good man. Like a burger. Or tacos. Yeah. Hot sauce. Money's on that shit. Yeah. Tomatoes and this. Alright. Control Monster. It's an alleged chupacabra sightings in New York, in New Orleans. The grunch is described to be an elaborate cross between the canid and reptilian chupacabras. New Orleans residents have so named the creature the grunch. But sightings and tales, unlike its cousins, seem to go back farther in Louisiana history than other areas of the world. Grunch story supposedly goes back to the Crescent City's early roots. New Orleans was founded August 25th, 1718, by the French Mississippi Company, under direction of Jean-Baptiste Le Moyen de Beville. It was named for Philip II, Duke of Orleans, who was regent of France at the time. His title came from the French city of New Orleans. The French colony was ceded to the Spanish Empire in the Treaty of Paris, 1763, and remained under Spanish control until 1801. When it reverted to French control, most of the surviving architecture of the Vieux Carré French Quarter dates from the Spanish period. Napoleon sold the territory to the United States and Louisiana Purchase in 1803. The city grew rapidly with influxes of Americans, French, and Creole French. Major commodity crops of sugar and cotton were cultivated with slave labor on large plantations outside the city. Earliest reports of the creature are said by locals to date to this period. As a principal port, New Orleans had the major role of any city during the antebellum era in the slave trade. Its ports handled huge quantities of goods for export. Export from the interior and import from other countries to be traded up the Mississippi River. The river was filled with steamboats, flatboats, and sailing ships. At the same time, it had the most prosperous community of free persons of color in the South, many of whom many old stories from people's families were around a time passed from oral traditions down to us concerning the grunch. Legend has it that the grunch dates back to the days of New Orleans early settlements, and its name crunch comes from the name of a road. The southern cryptid has also been called the vampire of Rabot Marie and Bywater area dating back to the early 1800s. Legend of Mary Laveau tells of how some believe that this form of chupacabra came into existence. An old voodoo story says Mary Laveau castrated a devil baby when he was born to stop him producing more of his evil kind. The bloody testicles allegedly turned into a male and female grunch upon falling to the floor, whereupon they attacked the great voodoo queen, Mary Laveau. The grunch are said to have almost killed her with their fierce bites and punching. The terror the old voodoo queen felt must have been unbearable as he struggled under the great strength before she fainted. When she awoke, the grunch and the devil baby were gone. Laveau was near death after this, and many have said that this is when Mary Laveau gave up on her voodoo ways and went back to being a good Catholic woman. Also see the devil baby at Haunted America Tours. New Orleans grunts have many strange powers. I believe stories about them come from the fact that the New Orleans Chupacabra is more visible than in other areas, and has adapted itself more to its surroundings, unlike its Texas, Mississippi, and Floridian relatives. Most common description of the New Orleans grunch or El Chupacabra is a goat-like being, appearing to have leathery or scaly black gray skin and sharp spines with long horns or quills running down its back. The creature stands approximately 3 to 14 feet or 1 to 1.2 meters high. They're also said to seem more intelligent and have human-like skills, able to open doors, use tools similar to how a monkey or a primate would. It is said to howl like a wolf, scream like a banshee, or bellow and screech like an ape when alarmed, as well as leave a strong stench. Many reports note that Chupacabra's eyes glow an unusual red, orange, or blue-green. Some witnesses have reported seeing bat-like wings and a tail, or long fur and goat-like markings in gray on a silky black coat. Unlike conventional Louisiana swamp predators, the breed of Chupacabra is said to drain all of the animals' blood and sometimes organs through a single hole. The legend of Grunch Road revealed some people claim it was in Chalamet, Louisiana, while others claimed it was in Gently or Metairie. But the real Grunch Road was located in a remote part of eastern New Orleans, near the community of Little Woods. Most people only ever encountered Grunch Road by accident, a dead end of scant shells and sand, sheltered by overgrown woods and great tall water oaks. It led to the ferny darkness of the major two-lane highway of Hayne Boulevard, from ghastly goat people and several ghosts of who only knows what. Stories of floating lights and strange cries in the night continue to this day. Photos of a creature alleged to be the Grunch have surfaced over recent years, keeping the legend of the Grunch Road alive to this day. Although evidence for the Grunch Road being haunted by beasts is anecdotal, it is interesting to find an old tale that has its reflections in the more recent sighting. A. Harvey, Louisiana's lady, said she saw one eating one of her neighbor's dogs. Also, sanitation workers tell of seeing them raid the garbage cans or chase garbage trucks along New Orleans East Haines Boulevard and Crunch Road area. The Crunch, or El Chupacabra, is said to haunt many areas in New Orleans and surrounding parishes, Lakeview, Metairie, Chalamet, Harvey, Tarrytown, Slidell, Covington, and Perdue. All these cities' residents have a grunt story or two to tell. They are said to live in the darkest parts of the New Orleans City Park golf course, and have been seen running in tall grass and along the Lilies, Australian-made National Battlefield. In the Perdue, Louis, and Beauté, Louisiana area, many say late at night you can see them running across Highway 90, looking for something or someone to eat. Lakeview residents nowadays tell us how they no longer leave their pets in the yard since Hurricane Katrina, as so many grunts were displaced into the neighborhood. In my Harvard, Louisiana home, many people tell of seeing them knocking over trash cans and chasing cats to drink their blood. People at first thought they were rabbit or mangy hairless raccoons. Nice. Grew. All right. What should do? Honey, on so I'm sure. Next up, got the Bigfoot of Louisiana. The Honey Island Swamp Monster is a humanoid cryptid that is reported to have been seen in around Honey Island Swamp, Louisiana since 1963. It was first reported in 1963 when two hunters spotted the creature prowling the swamps. The tracks indicated three-toed webbed feet. It's possible that Bigfoot evolves webbed feet to better suit its environment. Some of you believe it's an experiment gone awry. The creature was also featured on an episode of Lost Tapes, where it attacked a hunter who ultimately survived the attack. It's also featured in cryptids, the Swamp Beast. The monster was first sighted in 1963 when Harlan Ford and his friend Billy Mills were searching for an abandoned cabin. Spotted by Ford in a plane deep in the Honey Island Swamp, the friends reached a clearing where they spotted the creature, who kept eye contact with them only for a moment before escaping to the underbrush. Describing the creature, Ford said the following: "It was nothing like I have ever seen before, ugly and sinister and looking like something out of a horror movie." In 1974, Ford and Mills returned to the area on a duck hunting trip. Two found several dead boars with their throats torn out along the way. Realizing the boars were too far from the water to have been killed by alligators, they began to suspect the monsters they encountered 9 years prior was involved. Suspicion was confirmed when they noticed footprints, three-toed and webbed, around one of the boars. Other than have a second run-in with the swamp monsters, Ford and Mills retreated from Honey Island Swamp at a fast pace. Later that night, the friends returned to make a cast of the footprints. Another man named Ted Williams claims to have seen the creature many times. He even believes there to be multiple swamp monsters. "I could have killed them," Williams said, "but I didn't, because they don't seem to want to harm me." One day, Ted took his boat in the swamp and set trout lines. He was never seen again. Standing over 7 feet tall and weighing between 400 to 500 plus pounds, the Honey Island Swamp Monster, also known as the Louisiana Wookiee, is said to be covered in a thick coat of matted gray or brown hair and swamp weed. Its yellow eyes are seemingly reptilian, and the smell it emits has been called a stench of death. The primitive creature has long been blamed for the death of livestock and the mysterious disappearance of children in adjacent areas. Popular lore in the region is that the Honey Island Swamp Monster might be the horrifying product of a union between a chimpanzee and an alligator in the darkly primordial swamplands that must look much the same now as did thousands of years ago. The existence of almost any creature seems possible, no matter how ominous. One of the strangest legends surrounding the Honey Island Swamp Monster revolves around a train wreck, which originally occurred near the Pearl River in the early part of the 20th century. According to this legend, the train was full of exotic animals from a traveling circus, which fled into the swamps after the train derailed. While most of the creatures would soon perish in the harsh swampland, the legend goes on to tell us that a troop of chimpanzees managed to survive, even went as far as to interbreed with alligators. The result was a strange colony of reptilian-like mammals. However, this is impossible because monkeys and alligators cannot interbreed. The Honey Island Swamp Monster is allegedly to have a foul stench as other cryptids, especially in the hairy hominous category, Bigfoot, Skunk Ape, Missouri Monster, etc., possibly due to its marsh's natural smell. Swamp creature and animal planet's Lost Tape was most likely the Honey Island Swamp Monster, which attacked the professor, her nephew, and Bud Ray at night after the nephew broke its eggs. Oh, it lays eggs. What's crazy? What the hell? It's goddamn aliens, what it is. Okay. I just thought this week with like, you know, Christmas Carol with Charles Dickens and Ebenezer Scrooge, and he visits. He's visited by the three ghosts: Christmas past, present, and future. Right? Okay. Here's my thing. I thought, what if ghosts are like aliens? Right? And got visited by aliens. And got, as I went back in time. That's why. And like this. Ooh. Think about it. I don't know. Really cool tape. Oh, is there a movie about that? Is there like ghosts that the aliens visit them? I wouldn't do that. If anyone from Hollywood hears this, I want to see that. Please. Alright, we're getting down to the last monster. Cha 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 cha! Oh, yeah. Make sure I'm still recording. Yep. Still recording. The full moon hangs high above over the Louisiana swampland. The bright lights of the stars flicker in the murky licks of the waves near the towering, ominous cypress trees. Frogs croak their songs in the distance, and mosquitoes buzz as they fly around looking for their next meal. There's a howl in the distance. It sounds like a wolf, but something's a little off. Something standing on two legs on top of a fallen moss-covered tree is a large, snarling beast. Throws its head back, letting out a blood-curling howl to the moon. That's no werewolf, though. That's what we in Louisiana call the rougarou. Cheer. We're traveling down the interstate on the back roads of Louisiana. You'll see lots of beautiful scenery. Remnants of history freckle the map, whether it's old and potentially haunted buildings, abandoned theme parks, or even museums with very strange collections. Back in the thick fog-covered swamplands, where you will find the true beauty of Louisiana, perhaps even a monster or two, including the legendary beast called the rougarou. History of the rougarou is centuries old and has many different origins. The earliest mention of the infamous mystical Louisiana werewolf comes from medieval France. Back in the day of armor, swords, and jousting, there was a lot more to fear than plague and witches. Beasts called loup-garous, which means werewolves in French, were also infamous throughout the country. Back in the 16th century, they regularly blame various crimes on loup-garou. Apparently, there's a thing. They did back then. Did your house get ransacked during the night? Loup-garou. Did a child disappear from village without a trace? Definitely on loup-garou. Personally, I never hear about something terrible and say, yep, that's definitely the work of a werewolf. Case closed. That's what was an interesting problem they had to deal with centuries ago. Makes that morning commute not seem so bad, right? Villagers could capture people they believed to be a loup-garou and then hold back a public trial. Usually they found someone in the woods or some one in the village who was just acting strange. The court would ask the public if they believed the Kalos to be a Luguru, and usually the public agreed, mainly for fear to be added as a witch or a Luguru themselves. These Lugurus became a fear for many people in the country, leading them to earn their place in legends passed down to children. The French Catholics claimed that they would be turned into a Luguru if you did not follow the rules of Lent for 7 consecutive years. There's also a story that was told for the kids that if they didn't do what the parents asked, a Luguru would come and steal them away in the middle of the night. While many of the French migrated to Canada and the southern United States, they took the legend of the Luguru with them. With the migration of the many legends began to change to match the times and dialect, since Cajun dialect is a mix of French and English, and well known for changing words completely to roll off the tongue easier, the name of the beast changed from Luguru to Ruguru, also spelled Ruguru. In the swamps and swamps within the greater New Orleans area in Acadia is where the beast has come to live. He might even be the neighbor with the Honey Island Swamp Monster, which is Louisiana's Bigfoot swamp. Cajun legend says that the beast hunts down Catholics who don't follow the rules of Lent, which is similar to telling the old French stories. Another telling the story says that Ruguru is under a 101-day curse unless the affected person can transfer the curse to another human being. This curse usually comes from a local witch, sometimes a voodoo priestess. It is said that you can protect yourself against the Ruguru by laying 13 small objects by your doors. Apparently, when a person changes to Ruguru, they forget how to count past 12, probably since they only were about midnight and the moon at this point. Oh, okay. Ruguru was seated 13 objects, try to count them, and be unable to count them all. This would perplex it, and it will continue keep counting some. You're counting until the sun comes up, and it must flee. I'm not making this up. Despite the fact it was originally a legend, there are still claimed signs of Ruguru to this day, though it has died off a bit in the past decade. The beast is also hit pop culture in Louisiana. There's an annual Ruguru festival in Irma every year, and the Audubon Zoo in Orleans has a Ruguru exhibit, which includes a statue of the creature in all its swampy glory. The New Orleans Pelicans had originally thought about changing their names from the Hornets to the Rugarus at one point. Have you heard of Rugaru or another scary Louisiana monster before? Let us know in the comments below. My great grandfather told a story of being chased by a Rugaru while driving his horse and wagon on Bayou Blues Road just out of Irma. He said it's a big hairy beast and it scared him badly. Definitely scared us in a sense, and we used to speculate on who it could have been that was under the Ruguru curse. I believe most of us tell our children and grandchildren the same story as passed on our family history. I seen one when I was a young girl in central Louisiana around 5 in the morning. It came inside my grandfather's house and stood in the hallway. Its eyes reflected white and it was about 7 feet tall. As soon as I laid the eye on it, I ran to wake up my grandpa, and we came to investigate the matter. The door was wide open. So that's fucking scary. Great story. Thanks for hosting. Despite the Ruguru legend seemingly beginning as a way to scare Catholics and children, many locals maintain existence and have their own personal stories, especially among the older generation. A story in the Daily Comet Dial Tales of the Ruguru, some haunt local memories, states that in the past, rumors about strange or eccentric neighbors would float through small bayou communities, labeling various people as the dreaded Ruguru. This suggests an explanation for the abundance of stories from locals about seeing a Ruguru for themselves. A story in the Nicholsworth, a local college paper, named Ruguru Remains Strong Figure in Cajun Folklore, recounts a story from a woman about an experience in her youth. She says a local boy was being followed by a dog when he decided to cut it with his pocket knife. The boy saw the dog turn into a man, then ran home to tell his family. According to a woman, next day, a prominent physician appeared in town with his right arm cut in a sling. I remember when a physician shot himself here in Lockport. A year later, the boy killed himself and left a letter that family turned over to the sheriff. Even today, he refuses to let anyone see it. The Ruguru has been tied to the story of Durander Roadkill. A woman named Barbara Mullins discovered a supposedly undefinable carcass on the side of the road in 1996. Some have claimed it to the body of Ruguru, though others have speculated it might be a chupacabra or devil monkey. However, many people also believe it's just a dog. What's this story about? Oh, interesting. Okay. Alrighty. Okay. Let me get. Thank you. Yeah, let me say, thank you for, listening to this episode. I'll let you know where you can get a hold of me and get updated on social stuff. Yeah. If you're on Twitter, go to MuscleLearnersP on Twitter. That's Twitter, or you can go to my personal. Twitter account at G1 Tanner. So I think that's it. Let me check. Make sure I'm right about that. Yeah, G1 Tanner is found on Twitter that way. Also G1 Tanner on Instagram. You find links to episodes on the Facebook group at Monsters Podcast, or you can look up Anchor. Anchor.fm/. Yeah, so, yeah, you can find the podcast at anchor.fm/Monster Legends Podcast, and you can, they're right there on your browser, or you can find links to other listening platforms like Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Spotify, and yeah. What else? You can email me if you want to have a story, or maybe schedule be a guest, or submit fan art, or I need a really damn theme song. So I want to get done. About getting some people to do it. That's Monster Legends Podcast at gmail.com. Don't worry, I'll put all this in the description. But thank you once again for the listening to this episode and sharing with your friends. Follow me on all the socials, and I'll be asking questions and polls and stuff. Let me know if you want to be guests. Please. Any guests. Everything. And recommend podcasts also. So let's listen to the podcast from the beginning of the show. Once again, they were The Choice Show. Screaming Choice Show. Believe Me. What we talk about in the shadows, Screaming Choice Show, and Believe Me, Spirit Stories and Paranormal Tales. They're all on Anchor, and they're all fantastic. If you like this stuff, then you'll really like them. I don't know how to end this. Bye. Have a good weekend. You know? Okay. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. Want to find more information about Monster Legend Podcast, go to monsterlegendpodcast.com or anchor.fm/monsterlegendpodcast. There you can find all episodes and platforms on which the podcast is on, which you can subscribe to. You also can email me with questions that will be answered on the show. Thank you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.